Welcome to Toadstools and Garlic Cloves. I am your host, Dorothy, joined monthly by my co-host, Samantha, and I invite you to join us as we hunt down cryptids, explore the paranormal, and dive into lore from around the globe. So sit back and relax as I lead you on a weekly adventure of this strange and creepy world that we call home.
So where are we today?
Today, we are actually talking about the most famous lake monsters, Nessie and Champ. So we are in Scotland and Vermont again.
Sort of, and New York, sort of, because it's Lake Champlain, even though we like to ignore the fact that New York exists on the other side of the lake.
It's true. But also, my first notes on here are honorable mentions of lake monsters.
Great.
In Scotland, in Loch Mohar, we have the Muroc, who's not as famous as Nessie because no one's ever heard of him.
Obviously.
And then in Italy, in Lake Como, we have the Losario.
Ooh.
And then this is actually on your side, or I'm not actually in Scotland.
No, you're not.
We are literally like 200 feet away from each other. In the Canadian lake, we have the Ogopogo.
Aw, cute.
But also, we have the lake monster that I made up in the Nova Scotia episode called Wilbur.
Oh, how nice.
Wilbur. The new Champ and Nessie and all these other.
But anyway, so as I was saying, Nessie was not as popular as Champ, like pre-1935.
Okay, I'll give you that one.
Yeah, like after that, like, I'm not saying, obviously Nessie is more popular today because I hadn't heard of Champ until I moved up here. So, yeah.
It's true.
Whereas I had seen that great, great movie, The Water Horse. Have you seen The Water Horse?
No, I haven't, but I do have a note here that says Water Horse Kelpies.
Oh, yeah. Well, Kelpies are great. I do like Kelpies. I like me a good Kelpie. I like the one, I forget his name, the king of the water horses who, like, made people stick to his back and, like, drown them. Because they're sexy horses. So people are like, oh, I want to ride that horse. So they jump on the horse and then they get stuck to it, like adhesive wise. And then the horse jumps into the lake and drowns you and then eats your flesh.
So that's exactly what's in my notes.
Oh, God, I'm sorry.
So we don't need, by the way, that's ancient Highland lore. We don't need to go over that now.
Yay! Sorry. I get really excited about folklore, okay, guys?
I mean, yeah. Did you want to go over yours first?
Sure. We can talk about Champ, or as his skeptics called him in the 1800s, his snake ship or his majesty.
Snake
I don't know.
Ship.
I kind of want to call him his snake ship from now on because I just don't understand how that's supposed to be biting, because that's what the critics would call him. The people are like, it's a log, which, I mean, it probably is. Champ is probably a log or just a really big surgeon, but whatever. Anyway, so let's way back in time. The local tribes around Lake Champlain were the Iroquois and the Abenaki. The Abenaki are the people that we're going to really talk about today. Huh?
Isn't it Abenaki?
Sorry, I'm being Connecticutian.
Okay.
Abenaki.
Continue. I just said it wrong.
I say Abenaki. I'm sorry. Abenaki.
But no, actually, I think it is Abenaki. I don't know anymore. Just say it the way you want to say it.
The Abenaki are the main folk around Lake Champlain. Okay. It's a very important place for them because, you know, it's their source of life and everything. There's a bunch of, like, creation myths about Lake Champlain in general. The big one is Udzi Hozo, which translates to he who created himself. He's this godlike creature. He's not, like, the creator, but he made the valleys and mountains and rivers by making the mountains with his hands and, like, dragging himself along with his big, long arms and his stubby little legs and the rivers and valleys with his dragging. And then when he was done, like, he made the lake. He's like, oh, it's beautiful. I love it. I'm going to turn myself into a rock and just chill here forever. And
so
that's...
How did he make the water?
I don't know. He's a creeper. He just does stuff.
Yeah, like how they just like left that part out.
He made it. Like by dragging his body, he like made rivets.
Did he fill the rivers with sweat?
No, I think that just happened naturally. I think it just rained and then suddenly it was water. I don't actually, okay?
Oh, it lagged again.
run through of like how Lake Champlain came to be, because it doesn't really have much to do with Champ. I just thought it was interesting.
No, it is interesting.
So yeah, there's a rock off of Juniper Island, like between Juniper Island and Shelburne Point in Lake Champlain. That's just like maybe a meter or so above the water. It's just a rock. And that's Udzihozo. That's him. The white folk call it Dunder Rock because the British shot at it by accident in the fog.
They're just like, oh, it's my God, it's a rock. Shoot it.
Anyway, so yeah, people call it Udzihozo. Seems more fun to me, and we're going to call it that from now on.
Okay.
Anyway, so the Abenaki also have some lore about a lake monster that they called Gitakog, or Gitaskog. We now know him affectionately as Champ. But so when settlers first came from, you know, across the way, that's whole Champlain, who is what the lake is named after. Fun fact, apparently, the Abenaki name is Bitobaguk. Bitobaguk is the name of Champlain. I am sorry, again, every time I try to pronounce things, every time it's going to be terrible, so I'm sorry. Champlain was warned about a lake monster by the Abenaki. They told him and the other white settlers, I have a quote. Anyway, so they warned the white settlers that while in canoes, the men should not make loud noises or fire their muskets without good reason. Neither should they throw anything into the water, end quote, because that would disturb the lake monster that would, you know, then eat them or whatever. We're not entirely sure. Then there is...
Wait, did they follow the Native American rules of the lake?
I'm assuming so. I hope so.
Because they should have really said... Make loud noises, shoot at things.
I also, it's my own little headcanon that it was just, they didn't actually believe there was a lake monster. It was kind of like, we go around being like, oh yeah, there's a lake monster. Ha ha ha, that's Champ. Don't let Champ get you. So I think, my own personal headcanon, it was the Abenaki fucking with people and being okay. Like, there's a lake monster. Don't let the lake monster get you.
So
and then
like
the white
that.
Guys being like, oh, what? Lake monster? Oh.
I like that. But also, I listened to something. I listened to, oh my God, I can't remember the podcast. But they talked about the possibility that lake monster was actually not like a physical being, but a spiritual being.
Okay.
And I like that. But also, I like the whole.
I do like that. I just really like the idea of them messing with the white settlers. It makes me feel good inside.
I like that.
So anyway, now we're getting into my long, long list of sightings. I'm not going to say all of them because apparently there have been 600 plus sightings from when Champlain first settled the area to like 1992 or something like that.
Jeez.
So we're just going to do some highlights.
Yay!
So the first white man to have seen Champ is usually attributed to Champlain himself. But every time that I found reference to this, they also say, but probably not. The closest thing that they have is a quote that he wrote about some like sturgeon-type fish that he saw in the St. Lawrence River, which was still like a big fish, but
yeah.
You know, it wasn't. So that was my first quote that I wrote down, and it was really long. And then after I wrote it down, it's like, but prob not. And I'm like, thanks for making me write that down. Anyway. And then on Saturday, July 24th, 1819. Oh, by the way, Champlain was like the 1600s, like 1609.
Okay.
Whatever. We don't care. Champlain sucks. We don't like him.
Oh, good.
Saturday, July 24th, 1819, in the Plattsburgh newspaper. Boo, we don't like Plattsburgh either because it's in New York. This man named Captain Crumb, who is my favorite person on the planet, was on the scow, which I guess is a boat, on the Bulwaga Bay. And the Thursday before that Saturday, I didn't try to do the math to figure out what date that was.
I'm already lost.
So Captain Crumb saw a black monster about 187 feet long. which is a very specific about, but whatever. So a black monster, about 187 feet long, with a head resembling a seahorse that reared more than 15 feet out of the water. It had three teeth, eyes the color of a peeled onion, a white star on its forehead, and a belt of red around its neck. Now, the most fascinating thing about this, except for other than like his approximations, because yes, approximately 187 feet, approximately, was that he was at least 200 yards away when he saw this.
What? No. So,
Captain Crumb is my favorite person on the planet right now.
Captain Crumb ate some fermented fish and got high or something.
I don't know. I really appreciate that he reported this very minute detail.
Probably the town, like, individual that was always on mushrooms.
Whatever. Captain Crumb, you go. After that, in 1783, there was like a, that was, 1783 was a big year for Champ. A lot of people saw Champ on 1783, including a railroad crew who saw Champ, remarked that he was glistening silver scales in the sunlight, and then they just, like, parted ways, and they're like, we're not gonna deal with that shit. And then there was one Sheriff Nathan H. Mooney, who saw an enormous snake or water serpent that was about 25 to 35 feet long. Not all of us can be as precise as Captain Crumb, but we'll take it. Later that year, a steamship, W.B. Eddy, ran into Champ.
Rude.
Oh, Champ was fine. The steamboat almost turned over, but Champ was fine. That's what the tourists say, anyway.
Oh, good.
And then also, near the end of that summer, P.T. Barnum offered a reward for its hide.
I do know that. That came up in a couple of my things.
Good job, P.T. Barnum. I didn't see anything that showed that he got it, so that's
nice. No, he didn't. He was never collected.
P.T. Barnum. Sorry, yeah, Sam. I don't know if we're allowed to swear, but I have been. Anyway.
Oh, that's fine. But no, he never got the reward, or he never got it.
Awesome. There's a big, like, silence from Champ until 1945, when the SS Ticonderoga ship passengers claimed to see him.
Well, it was probably because a ship hit him, and then someone was like, we want to kill you.
Yeah. I think he was just chilling out. Anyway, that explains why he was more famous than Nessie until this around this time, so that's fine. Okay, and then we get into the point where there's photographic evidence.
Yay!
I did air quotes for that, guys. In 1977, there is the Mansea photograph, which was taken in like 14 foot deep water, so like how Champ is supposed to fit there, I don't know. But whatever. And then in 2003, there was a recording of beluga-like sounds. And there was actually some scientific literature written about it in the Journal of Acoustical Society of America. It was called Echolocation in Freshwater Lake. And it was by, I am sorry, all Germans everywhere, von Migen, Thaler, Gregory, and Martis wrote that. Apparently, and also I came across that there have indeed been beluga fossils in the lake, like 10,000-year-old fossils. But that also isn't that surprising, because Lake Champlain used to be part of the ocean.
Yeah, they found whale
fossils. You can you can still find, like, in, like, Burlington soil, you can find a lot of sea creature fossils all over the place. So that's not super surprising. And then in 2005, a man named Dick.
A man named Dick.
Dick Affolter and his stepson Pete Baudet got video evidence of a creature with a head or neck of a plesiosaur like animal with an open mouth in one frame and a closed mouth in another, and it appeared authentic and unmanipulated to the former FBI agents that they took it to. However, and here's a quote, "There's no place that I can actually see an animal or any other object on the surface," said the FBI agent. So, like, they're like, yeah, it's completely authentic, but there's nothing there. So thank you, Mulder and Scully. And those are my highlights of who has seen the monster. But also, Vermont and New York have passed laws protecting Champ.
I knew that there was a law.
There are several. In 1981, Port Henry, New York declared their waters safe haven for Champ. In 1982, the state of Vermont passed a House resolution protecting Champ. In 1983, New York, both State Assembly and Senate, passed resolutions protecting Champ. So, Champ, you're safe. Everything's fine.
Champ is safe.
You are not allowed to be hunted. So, even if P.T. Barnum comes back from the dead, the devil evil person, you wouldn't be able to give him his hide because it's illegal. Ta-da! Well,
what if Champ leaves the lake?
I mean, I don't know.
Or is
know
it just
how
like specifically
he's gonna do that?
Oh, you just wait. Oh no, wait, hang on. Weren't there sightings of him on land?
Oh yeah, there were some, not so much sightings of him on land, but there were footprints that did I write down her name? No, but a cryptozoologist saw some tracks that looked like a crocodile's, so they thought that maybe he's part of the crocodile family, but then other people thought it was just snapping turtle tracks.
Okay. I swear. So, did you watch any?
No, I'm not really good at doing my research by watching things. I usually just look up JSTOR documents.
Okay. See, you went the opposite route. You went, like, the scholarly route. Well, I watched literally 4 different documentaries.
I prefer doing the reading route because then I can check the sources of my sources.
Well, yeah, like I like to look at that too, but like, I don't know what happened with mine. I just got sucked in so hard.
Mm-hmm. I think that was the gist of what I found out. I don't really have any more quotes to find, but I can say that this was from like VPR and the Champlain Regional whatchamacallit site. I wrote it down. I'll give you all that when it's done.
Okay. Did you
I mean, if you want my sources, you can like, I'll send them to you.
I don't need them.
Okay, cool. We're not that
in one of my sources, one of the documentaries that I watched, he went from Scotland, he went back to Burlington, and he actually went to the Echo Museum,
mm-hmm.
where they have the original photo.
Mm-hmm. The Mansi photo?
Yeah. No. What one is it?
Of Champ?
Yeah, of Champ. Like, it's from 1970 or 80 or something like that.
Yeah, the 1977, the Mansi photo.
Okay, yeah, that's the one that they have there. I'm just going to give my 4 sources first, and these are all things I was able to watch for free because I'm awesome like that. No, I did watch one on Hulu.
Yeah, I saw that there was like a National Geographic documentary, and I was like, I should watch that, but I have to talk to Dorothy about this in 20 minutes, so I'm not going to.
Well, I watched the first one I watched, and this is the one I recommend because it gets you hooked. Like, it gives you all the theories. It gets you all hyped. So it's In Search of Monsters, The Loch Ness Monster, Season 1, Episode 2. Mm-hmm. And then after that, I watched In Search of History, The Loch Ness Monster. It's a History Channel documentary.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of unhyped it. I watched Naked Science, Loch Ness, and then I recorded the episode, didn't like it, set up the time to record it with you, and then I watched In Search of Aliens, Mystery of the Loch Ness.
No.
Oh, yeah.
Is that the theory that you're really excited about? The one where Loch Ness is an alien?
No. So the theory that I'm really excited about was in Search of Monsters. And it was touched on a tiny bit in in Search of Aliens. But this is the only 2 times I've heard of this theory. I do want to say I was listening to I was watching the Tesla Files last night and the day before. And they mentioned this theory also, just not in reference to Nessie and Champ.
Mm-hmm.
So it was an Einstein and Tesla theory.
Okay.
Okay. So okay. Now we have the two most eccentric scientists on board ever.
What about Newton? He seemed all right.
I'm pretty sure that if he might know any of this theory, but I don't know. Okay. So you touched on the Kelpies, so I don't have to touch on that. So we're good.
Yeah, I love me some fucking Kelpies.
So you love your Kelpies, I know.
I do. I just wanted to say that there are some good Kelpies. They're not all bad. Some are just tricksters. But anyway, sorry.
Okay, I want to go with the sightings first, and then I want to talk about the theories that debunk a lot of the sightings.
Yeah, love me some debunking.
Yeah. 565 AD was the first written sighting of Nessie by St. Columba.
Mm-hmm.
What he was doing was that he was bringing Christianity to
them pagans,
the Picts, and in the official Vatican records, he states that a man was killed by a water beast. He saw the same beast rise up and attack another man in the river, and he then used his divine powers against the beast and drove it away.
Oh, how nice. Thank you. Very own St. Patrick.
Yeah. And then we go into the 18th and 19th century, where scholars accounted for, in quote, waves without wind, fish without fins, and floating islands in the loch.
Ooh.
I know. So then we get into, I know, that's why I put it in there. The second, like, bigger sighting was in the late 1800s, where a local supposedly saw an overturned boat or log moving through the water against the current.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, oh, that's weird. There are about 30 to 40 sightings each year. Between those sightings, there's about 5 to 15 that are actually seen as more credible. The sightings didn't pick up until the 1933s, and the 33s, like there's more than that.
I mean, my favorite 1933 was...
Oh, parallel universes!
There is going to be more than one 2020. We all know that it's just going to be like... December 32nd, 2020.
Yeah, I don't even know. But no, so the reason why the sightings picked up was that a road was built along the shore.
Oh, okay, that makes sense.
So if you look at how the Loch Ness is placed, and also Loch in Scottish is lake, so it's Lake Ness.
Yeah.
So Loch Ness is that it has steep hills going into the loch, and those hills are covered with trees.
Mm.
So once they built the road there, they had a ton of more people visiting the loch, hence more sightings. And it was in May 2nd, 1933, in a news article, that a couple reported a rolling and plunging body resembling a whale for over a minute, at which point the creature then vanished into churning waters.
Hmm.
And that is really where the modern day legend just took off, was in 1933, because there's been similar sightings ever since.
Nice. That makes sense. That lines up with my timeline of Champ being more popular than Nessie until like the mid-30s.
Yes. Then, because of all these eyewitnesses happening, or these sightings happening with these eyewitnesses, they then brought in the I can't remember what year it was because I didn't put it down, but Weatherall, which was a big game hunter in his time, they basically wanted to do like a documentary of him finding the beast and killing it or something like that. He apparently made a footprint of the beast. So he made this footprint and said, oh, look, it's the beast's footprint. And then the people made a cast of the footprint and sent it to a museum. And then the zoologists concluded that was a hippo footprint, not just any hippo footprint, like a taxidermied hippo footprint. That was from Weatherall's big game hunting room, basically.
Yeah, no shit. Like, they found mud between its toes.
Like, I don't know how they figured that out, but the locals weren't actually too keen on Weatherall to begin with, so the second that everyone
figured out... Well, yeah, he wanted to kill Nessie.
Yeah. And then he didn't even try to, like, find Nessie in a, like, a proper manner. Like, on the second day, he's like, I'm going to make it a hoax. That gets into one of the most famous sightings that concluded with a photo called the surgeon's photo.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so it's called the surgeon's photo because the man that took it. So they say that he was a surgeon, but he was a gynecologist.
Okay.
I mean, maybe he was both. I'm not sure what was going on then. They basically were like, you know, this is a very respectable man in his field. He's a very somber man. He's not someone that would play a hoax or anything like that. Mm-hmm. Well, 50 plus years later, it comes out that he was actually really into playing practical jokes. No, he liked to play practical jokes.
Oh, nice.
So
he and Captain Crumb should get together.
Yeah, well, he got together with Weatherall.
And
they basically, Weatherall was really pissed off that they kicked him off his, like, documentary. So we have this really famous photo of, like, oh my god, like, this the famous photo of Nessie with her neck out, and, mm-hmm. you know, came out that that's a hoax. They got a motorized, like, boat, like, a little toy boat, and put a dinosaur in it, and then put it out and to the water, and basically figured out how to do the camera angle well, and just, like, threw some yep. stones to make it ripple, and then the individual, who I don't know why I didn't put his name down, but he basically turned in the photo. But it basically came out from, like, a great cousin or something like that, where they were just like, no, that was a total hoax. So it took 50 years for someone to say something. So they believed it was real for 50 years.
Oh, no.
Well, no, we all did. We all were like, that's probably not correct, but we don't know how they did it.
I mean, camera tricks have been around for a while, but yeah, I
oh,
know.
Oh, shoot. No, sorry. 1930s. I did have it in here. I put it in the wrong section. Robert Wilson. So it was from the 1930s. Then we have a few other more famous photos. There was, following the surgeon photo, one of the most famous pictures of Nessie was in 1997 by Richard White, who saw a disturbance in the water and pulled out their camera.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't get much more on that. I think that they were able to find a way to make the water look that way in the way that he saw, and I think that was it to it. There was absolutely no evidence of Nessie ever being aggressive or hostile to anyone except for in that very, very first account by St. Columba, where he ate someone. Or she, I don't know. Mm. Except for they do say that there was one time in 1952 that John Cobb was trying to break a speed record, and the lock was picture perfect, what they call Nessie weather, which, like, there's nothing happening, it's warm weather, but his boat apparently hit an object, and this is all on camera, his boat hit an object and flew apart and disintegrated. He died.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I mean, he was going, in 1952, he was in a speedboat trying to break a world record. So, yeah.
To be expected.
Yeah, he died. You see, the boat hits nothing. Like, it's just, like, clear water, then all of a sudden, boom.
Hmm.
Like, there's nothing there. I'm going to get into possibly dismissing that as messy. We have a few other sightings. Except for they are not in Loch Ness, so I'm not going to talk about that until I get to the hoax, or not the hoax. I just called myself out. No, the theory that might garner those sightings. So Loch Ness, so I'm getting into the history of it, okay. is 22 miles long, it's a mile wide, and has depths mostly up to 755 feet.
Okay.
The deepest part of the loch is 812 feet.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty damn big.
Yeah.
The loch itself is very murky and has a very high peat content from the soil surrounding the loch. And now I'm going to go into the theories, because everything else talks about theories. I'm actually going to jump back and forth between it. So there are a couple theories, which you mentioned before about Champ, about being a plesiosaur.
Yeah.
So that's one of the reigning theories, but they also talked about ancient whale that is also called a zeliodon or a basilosaurus.
Okay.
Or the possibility that's a giant eel or a sturgeon.
All right.
So in a couple of the documentaries, they pull up this head of a Basque sturgeon. And I swear to God, this guy pulls up the head of this like decapitated sturgeon. And I swear it was like an anaconda head. It was disgusting. And it just was like, oh no, like I'm never going to go into Lake Champlain again if these things are there, because they will eat you. They are literally bigger than me and they will eat me. But so I could see it being a sturgeon in 565 AD eating someone. Okay. I can just see that. A lot of cryptozoologists don't wholly agree that it's a plesiosaur and believe that it's much more complicated than that, because plesiosaurs are air breathers.
Mm-hmm.
So if it's an air breather, there's going to be more sightings.
Yeah.
Because it has to come up.
Breathe.
Yeah. It has to come up every 2 to 3 hours. But also, plesiosaurs lived in salt water.
Mm-hmm.
So the Loch is obviously a freshwater lake. That doesn't go into the whole thing that we do have animals that can live in salt and fresh water. There are about 10 aquatic species that are able to do that. So it's rare. Oh, I'm sorry.
It's rare, but not impossible.
Yeah, there's more than a dozen aquatic organisms that possess this ability. Cryptozoologists don't like that theory. The theory that a lot of cryptozoologists like is that the Loch Ness Monster is actually a giant amphibian, and it absorbs oxygen through its skin.
Okay.
So it doesn't have to come to the surface very often, and amphibians do better in cold water than reptiles.
All right.
So that makes sense.
Yeah.
Now, the cryptozoologists and a lot of other people do agree on the fact that there has to be a breeding population. I realized that we didn't say what they look like.
Oh, yeah. Champ is either a log or, you know, a big fish or a giant serpent. Like, I did say a couple things about what Champ looks like with how people described him, especially Mr. Crumb.
You did, because Mr. Crumbs was really, that was something that's hard to beat, Mr. Crumbs.
I do think that I neglected to say that the Abenaki spoke of Champ as a horned serpent, like a giant horned serpent.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, no, I think I remember that. There's two main types of sightings when it comes to the Loch Ness creature.
Mm-hmm.
One is a multi-humped sea serpent, and two, it is a stout-bodied, four-flippered, long-necked sea serpent. Number two looks just like a plesiosaur. A plesiosaur is a marine reptile with a long neck, snake-like head, long body, tail, and flippers.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they mentioned only once in Search of Monsters, they talked about the ancient whale. Just like once, they just said, oh, it might be an ancient whale.
Yes.
And then just, like, forgot all about it. But I looked up this Zilliodon, which is actually a Basilosaurus. It looks like a whale in the front, but then, like, a really thick snake in the back. And it was really creepy. Like, it's huge. I would be more on the whole plesiosaur side, honestly, because they're smaller. But also, they make more sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the other things that come up are, you know, why haven't we found any remains? So one of the leading theories is that it's a creature that can travel out of the loch and into the sea. And the way that it does that is through deep underwater caverns. The loch is actually sitting on a fault. So there's a lot of seismic activity that's happening. And that's the Great Glen Geological Fault Line. That was later talked about in another documentary I watched, when they said that there's actually no caves or caverns in the Loch Ness, because they used digital echo scanners and scanned everything out. And it's literally just straight. So there's no caves for it to hide. So right now we got rid of that theory.
Okay.
Now they also, one of the theories was that at one point in time, things flooded from over in the sea 11,000 years ago into the River Ness, into Loch Ness, and that the creatures were plesiosaurs that lived until then, or a creature like the plesiosaur lived till then and got stuck in the lock when the flooding stopped. So a really big mud deposit sample was taken from the bottom of the lake, and it shows the last 10,000 years of stuff. And it showed a ton of shit. But it did not show any evidence of salt water. So that theory's gone. See? I'm over here being all scientific. Then they're just like, it must be something that's just like going up River Ness into Loch Ness. And that's how they say that the salmon and the occasional seal get in. But we would see a huge creature do that.
Yeah, I think that, Is it even deep enough for something the size of Nessie to...
No, she would have to walk.
Yeah.
So people are like, well, you're saying that it's a plesiosaur, but plesiosaurs have been extinct for a million years. Well, here's the deal. We're still finding extinct species. What are you staring at?
I was looking at my brandy.
Oh, did you want to get some? Maybe. Do you want me to pause?
No, it's okay. It's too warm.
Okay. Well, so we're like we're finding extinct creatures, creatures that we're saying are extinct. And it is very rare, but it's called the Lazarus effect. And that's basically when you find a creature thought to be extinct for a long period of time. It happens all the time. In 1952, we found a live silly ant off the coast of Madagascar, and it's a basically a living dinosaur that was extinct for over 2 million years, or so we thought. So, yeah. See, I really did my research on this one.
You did a good job.
Then they talked to a plesiosaur expert, and it was only like a little blur. Were you leaving me? What are you doing?
I'm at a standing desk.
Okay.
So I'm just like... I can't stand still for too long, Dorothy.
I'm almost done, okay? So they talked to a plesiosaur expert that actually said that all those sightings with the neck being up, that plesiosaur can't actually physically do that.
Oh, like a giraffe, so it would, can't swim.
Yeah, it would lock, like the vertebrae would just lock up, and it can't physically do that. So there's that. So maybe it's not a plesiosaur. Maybe it's something else. Or maybe this is something that you didn't talk. I wish. So then they got even more scientific about it. I haven't even gotten into my favorite theory, by the way. So they were like, okay, you're saying that there's these huge creatures, there's a family, a breeding population in here. Can the lake even support this?
Yeah.
Cambridge and Oxford University did a joint expedition in the 1960s with Echo Sound and Gear, and they concluded that the possibility of the loch supporting a large group of aquatic animals was high. So yes, it could. Well, then we come to present day, they do another study. They don't do the whole echolocation and trying to find if there's something in there. No, what they do is look into the food chain. Could the loch actually support a breeding group?
That makes sense.
Yeah, it does. I really liked it. So the first thing they looked at was green algae. So green algae needs sunlight to live. And you remember how at the beginning of this, if you haven't fallen asleep yet... I said that there's a super high peat content.
Oh, yeah. Bringing it back around.
I know, right?
Look at you sowing the seeds.
I know. It's like, I.
What a reveal, Dorothy. Very
do
nice.
This. It's like I'm professional.
Crazy.
There is green algae, but there's not that much since the sunlight can only go down a few feet. So green algae doesn't survive well in the loch, which in turn affects the microscopic zooplankton that feed on the green algae. the small fish feed on the zooplankton and the large predators feed on the small fish. Remember how big I said the loch was? It's 22 miles long and a mile wide with depths of 755 feet. There are only 17 to 24 tons of fish that live there, which is not a lot for a lake that size. And they concluded that that is just enough to keep 10 500-pound creatures alive. And a plesiosaur is bigger than 500 pounds.
Yes.
So they concluded
We tried.
Yeah, there's too few fish to keep a breeding colony alive. So, I just got rid of a ton of theories on the Loch Ness Monster. But I want to get into my favorite theory, which I want to be true so badly. Are you ready for it?
I've been ready for it this entire episode.
Wormholes. She walks away.
Come on. Wormholes, no. Wormholes are the just like that's
okay. So wormholes hang on.
Are so, the explanation for everything that you can ever think of.
Okay.
Wormholes.
So just give me a second.
Okay. Yeah. Go ahead, sweetie.
I said that I was able to take this theory from two documentaries, and also from Tesla and Einstein.
Yeah, because they also believed in wormholes. So, like, sure.
Time portals, yes. So, time portals are not all wormholes, but all wormholes can be time portals.
Oh, is it like a square and a rectangle kind of thing?
Yeah. So, normally I do the hot tub jacuzzi thing, but... Okay. So, okay.
Of course, the hot tub jacuzzi debate is more like what you're wearing in the hot tub or the jacuzzi.
Oh, no, that's not what I think. All jacuzzis are hot tubs, and not all hot tubs are jacuzzis. You don't know that? Yeah, jacuzzi's a name. No, a jacuzzi is a brand name.
Oh, okay. I actually so, don't know. I thought that jacuzzis were, like, the ones that you could have installed as your bathtub.
Oh, I don't know about that. I just know they're a brand name. Oh. But everyone calls hot tubs jacuzzis when not all hot tubs are jacuzzis.
Not everyone calls hot tubs jacuzzis.
I do on the West Coast.
I've never heard of a jacuzzi as, like, in someone's bathroom.
Really? Like, we've got a jacuzzi in our backyard.
Oh, okay, never mind.
Yeah. Oh, they're a big brand name. But let me find... Basically, I was laughing. So I was laughing at the first mention of this.
Okay.
And then I started thinking. So they were like, time portals! When really they meant wormholes.
Okay.
but basically, what the theory is that there is a time portal or wormhole.
Mm-hmm.
In that 815 feet of water down there, and that basically what people are seeing and the reason why we can't find the creatures and there's no bones is that they're basically coming in through that wormhole, popping up, saying hey, and then leaving, or we are kind of having this weird like shift to actually seeing the past.
So plesiosaurus, but like when it was the ocean.
Exactly.
Okay.
So now see now you're kind of like,
no, I understand the theory. I'm just okay, fine, whatever. Okay. I don't not believe in wormholes. I'm just saying that wormholes can explain any natural phenomena ever.
And I love it. But
seems like a cop out anyway.
Here's the deal. A Loch Ness, along with other many bodies of water on the northern hemisphere, have a perfect geological condition So they have a geological condition that leads to a perfect storm, and that is granite and quartz. So there is a shit ton of granite and quartz in Loch Ness and also in Champlain, because granite is the state, Vermont state rock, and quartz is in granite. So quartz has an electromagnetic feel to it.
Mm-hmm.
When you put a ton of pressure back and forth on, or when you put a ton of pressure on quartz, it makes a negative field, which actually leads to the Kashmir effect, which...
The sweater?
Huh? Yes, it is the sweater. No, Einstein coined this one. So the Kashmir, like, this is not in, this is, I looked this up. So it causes the Kashmir effect, which is a very strange natural phenomenon, which is real. And we have proven to make tiny, tiny little wormholes before using the negative force. So the thing with Lake Champlain and also with the Loch Ness is that there is something in Lake Champlain called the Split Lake, which is basically a trench. It's a trench.
Oh, okay.
So there's a trench, and there's a trench in Loch Ness, and there's a trench in Lake Champlain. So the thing is that when you have these two things that create electromagnetic force bouncing off of each other, they have the, they can basically, it stresses the quartz. And when you stress the quartz, there's more, there's more electromagnetic stuff happening. And it basically can lead to a temporary transversible wormhole.
Okay. So, are Champ and Nessie the same creature?
It is possible.
What? But Nessie is a girl and Champ is a boy. No, it's fine, whatever.
No.
It's arbitrary. There's no need to sex things that we don't know exist.
Remember how I said that there's a lot of, along the northern hemisphere, there's a lot of freshwater lakes that have this perfect geological storm of quartz and granite? Mm-hmm. Well, if you follow the location between the 45th latitude north and the 57th latitude north, there's more than 16 freshwater lakes that are all cold water lakes that were made after the glaciers retreated, and they're on the same line of latitude with the same type of environment. So Lake Champlain has Split Lake, which is a half mile wide and 500 feet deep, with nearly identical features to Loch Ness.
Ooh, they're clone lakes.
Yes, there it is. I know a lot of people are, the second I just said, like, wormhole, they're just like, nope, it's not that.
They're going to do what I did and, like, take out their headphones and just walk away.
Yes, but I looked it up because it's actually really fascinating, the negative effect of stressing quartz. It makes a negative field. So that's why everyone's always about, like, ooh, quartz, it's all mystical, and Einstein and Tesla used quartz in their experiments a lot because of the electromagnetic field that it produces when stressed. The way that you get wormholes is through electromagnetic fields. So I feel like there is a possible theory or a hypothesis, and I like it.
I know you do.
It might not necessarily work for the Loch Ness Monster and all that stuff, but I do like the theory of wormholes. I do want to do a couple more things. I guess there were protocols put in place in 1979 by the British and Scottish government. They have plans and guidelines in place if the Loch Ness Monster was actually ever discovered.
Okay.
And ever is discovered. But also, they had planned to use dolphins to, like, scour the lake for Nessie at one point in time.
Okay.
But they never did that. But there's also, in the 1960s, the Loch Ness Investigation Bureau dedicated themselves to proving the beast's our monster's existence. So they ended up logging over 10,000 hours of footage every summer. And when they did that, they found this natural phenomenon that on warm days with flat, calm water, which is called Nessie weather, and everyone's out looking for Nessie, quote, inversion layers causes mirages that can distort ordinary objects and animals, unquote. Quote, display of fluid dynamics that occur frequently on the loch, end quote. So the majority of sightings are concluded to just be honest mistakes. Coming into like the 1950s, where they say that the guy that hit his boat on nothing, when it's perfect Nessie water or weather, that's the inversion layer and also the fluid dynamics at work underneath. There's a reverse current. So a reverse current most likely hit his boat
and killed him.
But also that reverse current makes things go upstream.
Oh, which explains that log. Mm-hmm. I mean, the
oh, yeah. And other logs, yeah. They also concluded, there's a lot of people, I know Adrian Shine is a really big person. He's in every single documentary I watched, and he believes that most sightings were the Baltic sturgeons, because, or at least all the slow, when the Nessie was going slow, that it was either Baltic sturgeons or seals. Because sturgeon are slow. That was literally it.
They are.
And I have like a lot more. I actually have the words flying ducks. Because a duck, like, you just like see their head and it looks just like the picture. And when you have that mirage happening, it looks bigger than it is.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden it flies away and you're like, son of a
son of a duck.
Or the humps in the water could be the ducks, like one head up, and then the other heads have them down, and they're just like, you know, swimming along, doing their thing. And this looks like a bigger, you know, Nessie. But then they also equated some older sightings to the seismic activity that's happening under the lake, because that can cause a disturbance on the surface without actually feeling an earthquake. So when you have the rippling that's happening without anything causing it, they say that it's seismic activity.
That makes sense.
And that's where I'm going to end this. But I really, really like
the wormhole.
The wormhole theory. I like the wormholes. So much. Oh, I love it.
The wormholes are great.
So I do want to, we can end it there.